It was 8 years ago now when a congregation was gathered, like we are here this morning, in the sanctuary of the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. Suddenly, in the middle of their joy-filled service, a man in the back of the room took a shotgun out of a guitar case and began shooting into the congregation. One of the ushers, in an effort to protect people, jumped in front of the shooter and was killed. A visitor from a neighboring congregation was also fatally wounded, and several more people were seriously injured before the man was wrestled to the ground and held down until the police arrived. It was a terrifying experience for everyone in that community, and it was a hate crime. The man who wielded the gun targeted that church for its progressive views. He had walked into the building that Sunday morning intent on killing liberals, who he blamed in a 4-page manifesto for the country's ills and his own inability to hold on to a job. In the aftermath of the tragedy, Tennessee Valley UU was embraced by the surrounding community. Neighboring churches came forward and offered the traumatized congregation their love and support. Members of the Presbyterian church next door announced that they would serve lunch every day for a week for the members of the UU congregation so that they could be together in their grief and in their confusion. Children from the Knoxville elementary schools folded origami paper cranes with messages of peace. The paper birds were strung together in long streamers, which were suspended from the rafters, forming a beautiful display of colored paper around the sanctuary. Cards and flowers came flooding in from Unitarian Universalists all around the country, including from this congregation. The outpouring of kindness, compassion, and support was breathtaking. The following Sunday, when the congregation gathered again to rededicate their sacred space, their minister, Reverend Chris Bice, said, "A man came into this space with a desire to do an act of hatred, but he has unleashed unspeakable amounts of love." Hatreds do not ever cease in this world by hating, but by love. This is an eternal truth. Overcome anger by love. Overcome evil by good. As I'm sure you remember, one evening, just last June, members of the Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina, were gathered for a Bible study when a gunman entered and opened fire, killing 9 people, including their senior pastor. The shooter, Dylan Roof, later confessed that he targeted the members of the black church in hopes of igniting a race war. 2 days after the shooting, family members of the victims had an opportunity to confront Roof in a bond hearing. One of the most remarkable parts of this story is that each of them, as they shared their grief, also offered him forgiveness. The daughter of a 70-year-old victim, Ethel Lance, told him, "I will never talk with her ever again. I will never be able to hold her again, but I forgive you." The granddaughter of victim Daniel Simmons said, "Hate won't win. My grandfather and the other victims died at the hands of hate. Everyone's plea for your soul is proof that they lived in love and their legacies live in love." At the memorial service for the senior pastor, the Reverend Clementa Pinckney, the people gathered made it clear that they stood for everything that Dylan Roof didn't stand for. If he was about hate, then they were about love. When the bishop spoke, he said, "Someone should have told that young man. He wanted to start a race war, but he came to the wrong place." His words received thunderous applause. And the mayor of Charleston told the press, "A hateful person came to this community with some crazy idea he'd be able to divide us, but all he did was unite us and make us love each other even more." Within a month, the governor of South Carolina signed a bill that removed the Confederate battle flag from the State House grounds and sent it to a museum. She signed the bill with 9 pens and then gave each of the pens to the family of the 9 victims of the massacre. She said that by showing forgiveness after the shooting, they caused the change of heart that led to the passage of the history-making bill. She said, "This is a story that forever showed the state of South Carolina what love and forgiveness looks like. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. And pray for those who spitefully use you." Hatred and love are opposites, but they are not equals in strength or potency. I used to think of them as if they were opposing forces pulling the rope in a tug of war. One gains while the other loses. But that image gives hatred more power than it actually has. I've come to understand that they are opposites in that hatred is the opposite of love, rather the absence of love. Just like darkness is the absence of light. So when pure love shines into the dark corners of hatred, it vanishes, becomes impotent, and melts away. It is only when we oppose hatred with the equal energy of anger that we strengthen it. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "Hatred paralyzes life, love releases it. Hatred confuses life, love harmonizes it. Hatred darkens life, and love illuminates it." Hatred is a fear reaction of the ego. It is a set of ideas and behaviors that form a protective layer that we hold up to shield us from something or someone that we believe is a threat. Feeling vulnerable and threatened can lead to a sense of powerlessness, which becomes a downward spiral. But there is power in anger, and there is power in hatred, and they give us back the illusion of control. Cloaked in hatred, a powerless person feels like they can get through whatever the day holds. It has become clear that a great many people feel powerless in our country right now. The fear-mongering, the hateful speech by a certain political hopeful is appealing to an alarming number of people. His hateful rhetoric is giving his supporters permission and encouragement to give in to their most base and vile fears, prejudices, and hatreds. Not only do the crowds cheer and chant along when he says hateful things from the podium, but he encourages his supporters to physically assault people who dare to show opposition to the vitriol he is spewing. This disturbing phenomenon has been named the Trump effect. And the primary election results suggest that there are a great number of people who find this kind of power intoxicating. We have woken the dragon. And thankfully, at the very same time, we are also seeing more and more people emboldened to take a stand for love, compassion, and justice. Though these stories are rarely conveyed to the masses by the major media outlets, I read about them every day through social media like Facebook and Twitter. The other day, I saw a video. A group of NYPD officers of color have recently come forward to expose practices within the police force that intentionally target some of the more vulnerable populations in New York City: African Americans, immigrants, and the LGBT community. These officers are taking a tremendous personal and professional risk. They may lose their jobs, and they will most certainly be targeted by their peers and higher-ups, but they are doing so together for the sake of justice. I hope that their act of courage will inspire other officers around the country to expose similar policies and practices. Shining the light of love and truth, exposing the endemic systems of prejudice and oppression will bring healing and balance to our society. Social media is making it easier for us to organize and bring attention to practices that are unjust. Black Lives Matter demonstrators have forced the presidential hopefuls to address race relations and unjust systems of oppression in our nation. Cameras on cell phones hold police and other people accountable, and they capture acts of violence and hatred. Here's another story about how a carefully chosen response to hatred can diminish its power. In May of 2007, again in Knoxville, Tennessee, a local Ku Klux Klan group hosted a rally. Now, it's not unusual that people will gather to counter-protest the hatred and the bigotry at the white supremacist rallies. But the counter-protesters at this particular rally were a very special variety. They call themselves the Ku Klux Clowns. And they arrived at the rally dressed in white gowns, complete with painted faces, pointy hats, giant shiny shoes, and red foam noses. Amanda Cagle, who's a member of the organization, said tongue-in-cheek, "We heard the formal dress was white gowns." The clowns danced and sang, played the cymbals and trombone, and twirled hula hoops. They were excited because they had heard that a parade of other clowns had come to their town, and they wanted to join the party. They pointed and cheered and danced merrily when the Klan demonstrators came marching around the corner. The clowns were eager to celebrate whatever it was that those visiting clowns were there to celebrate. So when the Klan shouted, "White power," the clowns put their gloved hands to their ears and delighted to know the reason for the party, and then joined in yelling with glee, "White flower." They reached into their pockets and began throwing flour into the air while running in circles. Huge clouds of white powder rose, getting everywhere. Hate groups enjoy stirring people up, seeming to feed on the rage that they inspire. But the lighthearted mockery and playfulness of the Ku Klux Klowns took them off guard, and they became enraged. The unexpected charade must have been too much for the Klan's leader, Alex Linder, to cope with. He rushed the comical counter-protesters in a fit of fury and was promptly arrested by four Knoxville police officers. The clowns were able to maintain their innocent and playful composure and marched together with their new friends. Along the route, more and more people joined the clowns' parade, and by the end of the march, the counter-protesters outnumbered the Klansmen by almost 3-1. The clowns danced and handed out flowers and made people smile and laugh. Lao Tzu observed, "People are inclined to react forcefully whenever force is being applied to them. Violence always recoils upon the perpetrator. Since violence begets violence," he says, "avoid violence. Let them wear themselves out." It takes courage to speak truth to power, to look hatred squarely in the face. The original use of the word courage, meaning to stand by one's core. All traditions teach that living from the center is what enables us to face whatever life brings. That core within us is love. That center is our ground of being, our higher self. We have access to infinitely more power when we are coming from that place. We can do just about anything when we are surrounded and encouraged by loving, playful, warm-hearted companions. And when we do it together, we are emboldened and fortified by the strength and power of love between and among us. We lift one another up. The people at the Tennessee Valley UU Church chose to keep their hearts and their doors open, and love came flooding in from around the country. The forgiveness of the families of the victims in Charleston helped remove the Confederate flag from the State House. A bunch of social activists dressed up as clowns risked looking like fools and ended up ruining a perfectly good hate rally. When we choose to act in love, we are doing holy work. When we refuse to allow hatred and bigotry to stomp on life in all of its glorious diversity, we are doing the work of love. And when we do this, we are aligning ourselves with the spirit of life, with God. We soon discover that we do not act alone, that grace appears. I know in my heart of hearts that love is infinitely more powerful than fear and hatred. A society motivated by love excludes hate in every form. So I leave you with this. What chance will you take? What are you willing to risk to become a beacon, a channel for love in this world? May you, may we find together all the courage we need to usher in the realm of love to this world. May it be so, and amen.